Good morning, everyone. Sorry we're a few minutes late. Jason and I had a little meeting this morning with the internal audit folks, so we ran just a few minutes late. It was a very productive meeting. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for the leadership and time that you commit to this board. A lot of progress is being made. With that being said, Sheldon, are you out there? Sheldon is joining us video conference. Looks like we have everyone else here. Ms. Henson, any reports on driving in this morning?
Record time. No ticket.
Sheldon, are you there?
I can hear you all.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to get started. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, roll call, Secretary Brinkley.
Regent Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Ernst.
Present.
Regent Harris.
Present.
Regent Higdon.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Regent Sheldon McKinney.
Present.
Regent Jason McKinney.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Porter.
Present.
Mr. Chair, we have 11 regents present representing the quorum of the board.
Outstanding. Again, good morning. The minutes were distributed electronically. Are there any additions or corrections to the quarterly meeting minutes of December 13, 2019? Hearing no additions or corrections, we're going to pay a motion for approval.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Regent Jason McKinney and a second by Regent Will Harris for approval. Any other discussions? All in favor of approval, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. The minutes are unanimously adopted. I'll read the statement, typical statement about the consent agenda items. The committee of the board met on January 31st to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for action. Items Executive-4 and Finance and Budget-5 were not presented at the committee meetings and shall be removed from the consent agenda for further discussions and a separate vote. With that being the overall consent agenda statement, we next turn to our committees. And first up is Chairman Bale with Academic Affairs.
Academic Affairs has 3 action items, all of which were presented at committee meetings on January 31st. Is there any further discussion of any of those items? If not, I'll entertain a motion to include all 3 action items as listed.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. All right. Before we move on, I do want to give our provost an opportunity to make a few words. And we have our emeritus professor here with us this morning, which is nice and I appreciate. And before you say anything, let me make a comment that I hope all the board appreciates your messages that we're now getting via the email, in which give us better insight into what's going on at least a weekly or monthly basis in your department.
Every other week.
It's a busy department.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Donna Blackburn. Donna, stand up. Told her to stand up and look beautiful. Who is now emeritus professor. She has served as a faculty member in the School of Nursing since the beginning of her career. Her entire career has been here at WKU. She's a WKU undergraduate, graduate. with an undergraduate degree in nursing, and then your master's and PhD are from Vanderbilt, is correct? So she spent her entire career here and served as chair a couple of terms, it looked like. I think while we really appreciate the service that she has brought to our campus, I think what's really worth mentioning is that she hasn't served the community in a variety of ways and on a variety of boards, and that service is truly impactful for this region. Even though she is now retired, she continues to serve our region, and I think that's really meritorious. So I appreciate your contributions and your continued connection to WKU, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And so I feel like I've been here all my life, and it's been a very important part of my life. It's been a wonderful journey, and I'm just glad that I had this opportunity. Thank you.
I want to add a personal comment to that. I have a nurse practitioner that's worked with me by my side every day for 15 years, who is considered Donna a mentor, and it's an example of what real tangible benefit you have produce for our area for your entire career. But whenever you talk about Donna Blackburn, the word nice comes up. And when you're smart and nice, it's a pretty good combination. So thank you. Mr. Chairman, that's all the business we have for that.
Thank you, Chair Bell. I'd like to reiterate Dr. Bell's comments about the communication from the provost's office. And as I got in the room a little late, but I would like to extend a thank you and a welcome to the provost and the deans and VPs for attending this morning. We really appreciate seeing your smiling faces. And as we take a break today at some point, let's make it an effort on our part as board members and your part to introduce yourself to everybody. I think most of us know everybody, but just a meet and greet real quick, because we do appreciate everything you do for the Hilltop Nation. With that being said, we next move to the Executive Committee, which is my RAM. We have Executive Items 1, 2, and 3 were presented and discussed at the January 31st committee meeting. Is there any further discussion on those topics? Anyone wishes to remove an item from the present agenda, that being 1, 2, and 3? Hearing none, I will ask for approval of executive action items 1, 2, and 3.
Make a motion.
Second.
Motion by Regent Bell, second by Regent Henson. Is there any further discussions? Hearing none, all in favor of approval, aye.
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 Opposed, like sign. Passes unanimously. We next turn to Executive Item 4, which was not part of the consent agenda, and who is presenting on that particular matter?
Good morning. As part of the project that we approved for the Philip Hatchett Golf Facility, BGMU, there's a request, and I'm sorry that this is after the fact, an easement, the electrical easement that we put underground. About 150 feet long by 10 feet wide that provides the utilities for the facility. And so we respectfully request that we grant that easement to the BGMU to service that line.
Any board member have a question or seek further clarification? Is your recommendation that we approve this?
It is.
Mr. Preston, is your recommendation that you approve this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Further discussion? Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Regent Bell. I didn't catch a second. Was
that second?
Regent Nichols seconded. Again, any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries unanimously. Brian, is there anything else you want to add this morning? As a lawyer, you're never supposed to ask a question you don't know the answer to. I don't know the answer to this, but anything else while you're on the
No, I appreciate the man who spoke.
Anybody got a question with Brian? How much money have we saved on snow removal this year? Yeah. Budget's balanced, right?
Yes.
Okay, next committee meeting is Finance and Budget. Chair McKinney, Jason.
All right. At our last committee meeting, items FB 1, 2, 3, and 4 were each discussed. And those are being presented on our consent agenda. Is there any further discussion on any of these items, or would anybody like to pull any of the items out for a second?
I don't need FB 3 to be pulled out, but I cannot vote on the consent just because I have to abstain from FB 3. I'm fine with it staying in, and we can go ahead and proceed. I just want that out.
Any other further discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
George, I second.
I second.
All right. All in favor of approving FB 1, 2, 3, and 4. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Alright.
Abstain.
Oh, sorry.
Sir.
Noted abstain. Alright. The next item on our agenda is FB 5, approval of allocation to renovate the health sciences complex.
Yes. Sure. We are requesting an authorization not to exceed $1.5 million. To complete the renovation of nursing classrooms, and I'm going to turn it over to Dean Basta. Before I do it, one point of clarification on the source of funds. It's actually coming from carrying over associated with the Doctorate of Nursing program rather than the academic affairs. So, Dean Basta, yeah. Thank you. Okay, good morning.
Good morning. Wow, it's very different up here than from back there. So thank you for inviting me to come speak with you all this morning about the nursing program and our upcoming renovation. So first of all, I just want to talk a little bit about the nursing program, of which we've already had a little discussion this morning. But I've only been in this position as dean for 9 months, but it took me about 2 days to realize how important the nursing program is here regionally and to CHHS, WKU, and the community at large. So everywhere I go, 95% of my discussion is about nursing. So whether it's with our CEOs locally, who these are nurses, and they make that clear every time I talk to them, or it's just talking to community members saying they know somebody who's either been in the program, or wants to be in the program. So nursing is something I talk about all the time, and I realize how important it is here to this community. And we have a very highly sought after program. At any time, we have 800 pre-nursing students who are trying to get into our program. And if any of you have been to our facility, the MCHC Medical Center, WKU Health Sciences Complex, it is an amazing facility. I did not get to see it last year at this time when I was interviewing, so I saw it shortly after I started here in July. And it is truly mind-blowing. And I hear that from parents and students all the time. So I just had a parent in my office last week who, oddly enough, is my financial advisor, but she had driven up from Nashville the first week I started here, and the first thing she asked me was not about my finances, but about the nursing program. She said, I have a junior who wants to come to WKU, or is thinking about coming to WKU for nursing, and asked me a whole bunch of questions. And at that time, I realized I better do some homework on the nursing program, because I'm going to be asked about this a lot. And she came to my office last week after having gone on a tour and said, while she was kind of on the fence and considering a few places after seeing that facility, she is coming to WKU. And I hear this all the time. So it really is an amazing facility. We are bringing students here to become nurses, and once they're here, once they get into the program,
their passing award from the treatment was 97% of the pass rate. So we have a very strong program that we are very proud of.
Because of that, though, our regional shortages, our CEOs ask me all the time, the Chamber of Commerce also says, if there's any way you could produce some more nurses, we will hire them immediately. And so when the building was built, we built classrooms to accommodate 80 students per cohort per semester. And then that changed as the shortages had become greater and the pressure to produce more nurses. They made the decision to up that cohort to between 100 and 130 students per semester per cohort. And while that's great because we're producing more nurses, we recently realized that that may put us in an issue with accreditation. So we could be out of compliance for our Board of Nursing accreditation. And I take that very seriously. So Mary and I, when she brought that to my attention, we thought through all the different options that were possible. One of the options was to reduce back down to 80 students per cohort. That would not make people here locally happy. It also would be not immediate because we've already admitted between 100 and 130 students per cohort. The second option is to double our faculty for the BSN program, but obviously that is going to have continuing costs each year, which is not an efficient way to be able to offer two sections of each course when we could have them as one. The other option is to do what we're currently doing, and I'm going to let Dr. Bennett talk about this in just a minute and how this impacts accreditation, is that we have our classes split between two classrooms, and the instructor is in one classroom and being zoomed to the other classroom. So half of the students are seeing the instructor on the screen, much like here. And apparently that is not okay for accreditation and could put us at risk, and certainly we don't want to do anything that could put us at risk for losing our accreditation. So those are the options. And so the fourth option is to remodel the three classrooms down to two so they'd be able to hold at least 140, potentially 160 students in one classroom. So we realized that was the best one-time use of money because then we'll be able to produce at least 140 students moving forward each cohort. That brings in additionally another $210,000 to the program just by adding 20 students. If we can add in 40 students, that's almost $500,000, and the classroom would pay for itself very quickly. And again, the funds are coming from CHHS carry forward money that was not or is exempt from being centrally assessed because they are DOC programs. So we're requesting that we can use that money to renovate this building, and the urgency is that when we realize this was the best option, we have to do it when the students are not here, and that's during the summer. So we try to start in April to be done by August. If we don't do it this year, then that puts us back another year and, again, could potentially impact our accreditation. So I'm asking that you allow us to use that. Dr. Bennett, would you like to tell us specifically what accreditation is?
Sure. We're accredited by the Kentucky Board of Nursing and by CCNE. And when we first proposed to do this, the Kentucky Board of Nursing gave us a blessing to go to 120 in the baccalaureate and 40 additional students in our MEPFIN program, which do the same classes. And so we originally proposed to do this using this double teaching method because we knew our classrooms wouldn't accommodate them. However, we quickly realized that doubled the faculty workload, and we weren't going to get any more faculty. I've had two faculty positions open for 2 years. I can't get faculty here. There's an acute nursing faculty shortage in addition to an acute nursing shortage. So then we tried the Zoom method. However, we've had technology issues, which has created a lot of stress for the faculty and the students. And then finally somebody said to me at a community meeting, they said, "How are you guys doing this? We just got cited for doing the same thing you're doing." And I thought, oh, I had not thought about that. The regulations had not kept up with the technology, and there isn't any, literally I'm supposed to have a seat for every student that I admit, and in fact we are not doing that right now. We have a seat for them, they're just not in the same room with the faculty member, and they're Zooming, and that apparently is going to cause us some issues. Fortunately, we have not been formally cited. However, this fall we have to either fix this or I can only admit 80. I can only admit the number of students that I can fit in the classroom with faculty. So hopefully this summer we are going to fix that problem by taking these three large rooms that are all adjacent to each other, make them into two large rooms that will seat And I also got trouble with the fire marshal because we squeezed more seats in the room than for a lot of time. So essentially this was all poor planning on my part. I wanted to get those nurses in the program and out because I'm trying to meet workforce development needs, but then all these other things sort of domino effect of is can't do this, can't do this. Oh, okay, we will go back to see what we can do. And so the best thing we can do is to make these rooms big enough to seat the kids that we have currently admitted. And just yesterday we have 160 applicants for 120 seats to start this fall, and these are qualified applicants. We'd love to have them all. We're going to admit however many will fit in the room, and we hope to make the rooms bigger. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Chair McKinney, one other thing. The project is authorized in the state budget.
It's unfortunate that the accrediting body isn't keeping up with the times in terms of how we educate people.
And the Board of Medicine is doing the same thing because UK was telling me that they're having issues also. So I know that we're all these boards have not kept up with the technology.
That being said, we're in a spot. Does it negatively affect the students' experience doing it through the Zoom?
Yeah, we've had some issues. What happens is that when we Zoom, we're having trouble with it dropping the audio sometimes. Sometimes it's dropping the visual. Sometimes they can hear the instructor, but they can't hear the questions the students in the other classroom are asking. So they get the answer from the faculty, but they don't know what the question was. So we're trying to deal with all these things. Like I said, we're just trying to make this work to get through this semester, and we're hoping for a better solution by fall. But we have tried a number of things. We're using the South Campus, but those classrooms are even smaller. We're still having to Zoom down there also. So we're also using some rooms here on the main campus. However, because our classes are scheduled so different than the rest of the university, we really can only have them on Thursday evening. So that's the only time they have space for a three-hour class. So that's sort of making our lives difficult. But we're working with the situation, and we hope for a good solution by fall.
You know, one of the, not surprising to hear any of this, and obviously the technology is getting better. There is technology is to be more efficient. But the beauty of this is if we do the adjustment in the outlay of the room, that as the technology advances, they will have other options for the other 40 students that we'd like to get into the program as the technology advances. So this actually would be an additional improvement down the road that has nothing to do with the decision we make today.
I have two questions. The first one is, when I came to WKU many decades ago, WKU prided itself that we basically didn't have large classrooms. And so, to me, you said these are one-time funds, but actually if you do expand the admissions into the program, they are permanent funds on a recurring basis. And so can you elaborate a little bit why it is so difficult to find nursing faculty? Is that a salary issue? Is that a...
We don't pay them enough. And they can go out and work and make a lot more than they do as faculty. And it's very difficult to want to convince them to work full-time for us. So that's been an ongoing problem since I started 9 months ago. But I know it's historically been... for quite a while.
Yes, in addition to a nationwide faculty shortage, because nurses at the associate degree level and more than our faculty do, that it's hard to convince somebody to get a minimum of a master's degree to teach and to work for our salaries. Even if they really would like to have that teaching schedule and they really would like to have summers off with their children, they usually will tell me, I just can't afford this because I make so much more work 3 days a week at the hospital. That this is a difficult sell, particularly when we try to talk about what it takes to get tenure, to get the doctorate, to do the research. It's just a very hard sell. And all across the nation, we're all scrambling for the same few people that went forward to get doctorates.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. My second question is about these carry-forward funds. So I come from the science college, and I'm not aware that the science college, for example, could accumulate so much money for such a project. Can you sort of elaborate a little bit how such a large sum of money comes about from the projected program?
Well, if I understand it, again, I'm new, so I'll throw this to Susan if this is incorrect, but any of the professional doctorates, when they were created, have to already be operating on RCM, so they are covering their expenses, and any revenue that then is incurred is kept in the college and not subject to any tax, basically, at central administration. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so that's where that money has come from, is that it has piled up over the years from our professional doctorates.
So that's an accumulation over several years.
Correct.
To make that happen.
And the doctoral program is currently paying the lease on the building, or the nursing's part of the lease, and so they do have to bring in a significant amount of money and show that they completely self-support the faculty salaries and the building lease for that program. That was part of the deal to get the doctorate here.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Not, I'll entertain a motion to approve FP5.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All
right.
All opposed, like sign. All right, the motion carries. And that ends the agenda for the financing budget.
Next, we turn to student affairs and Jared Henson.
You ready?
So I was told I have 3.5 minutes. So we'll chew through this Tasmanian devil style. I'm happy to report, unlike last year, we've got a lot of good news to share on the new student front. When we looked, starting off just at raw admissions numbers, so far this year we've admitted 154 more students on this date this year than on this date last year. And when we dig down into who's making up that growth, I'm really encouraged by the fact that the bulk of that growth is coming from Kentucky. You all are well aware of what's happening population-wise with college-age students in Kentucky. That's not a growing pool. So the fact that we're capturing a larger portion of a shrinking pool really attests to the fact that other universities aren't capturing those students. And so it makes us a little bit of an outlier in the state in terms of our admission numbers. And, you know, when you think down the road, not just at these students' first semester on campus, but as you know, the state of Kentucky rewards universities through performance funding at a higher rate for Kentucky residents than non-residents. So the fact that the bulk of our growth is coming from Kentucky, we're not only fulfilling our mission to serve the residents of Kentucky, but we're also putting the university in a good position down the road in terms of performance funding. So when we look at the admitted students, we also tend to yield Kentucky residents at a better rate than we do non-residents. Generally, we yield Kentucky students about 4% better than non-residents. So what that means is that there's about a 4% greater chance that a Kentucky resident who's admitted to WKU will actually enroll here in the fall than if that student was a non-resident. And we also know that we generally retain and graduate Kentucky residents at a higher rate than non-residents. So those Kentucky numbers are good, those admitted student numbers are good, but I don't want you to get too hung up on that. The really good news when we're looking at what's happening so far with our admitted students that will be coming in next fall is when we look at orientation registration. Right now, at this point in the recruitment cycle, the most significant action that a student can take is to register for new student orientation. Every freshman that comes to WKU has to participate in new student orientation. We call it the Topper Orientation Program, or TOP for short. And so that's data that we track very carefully. If a student registers for orientation, there's about an 85% chance that he or she will actually show up to orientation. And if they show up to orientation, there's about a 92% chance that student will come to WKU in the fall. So this is what we're really tracking closely at this point in the recruitment cycle. So I'm happy to say that as of this date today, we're up 399 more students that have registered for orientation than on the same date last year. Really sorry that we couldn't just bump it up one or two students to get over that 400 mark, but 399 this early in the cycle is pretty significant when you think of those students' likelihood to come to WKU. Again, that growth has been primarily driven by Kentucky. So of those 399 students that we've seen the increase, 327 of those are from Kentucky. And so, again, that means we're capturing a shrinking pool, a larger portion of a shrinking pool of students that the other universities in Kentucky aren't capturing. And when we look at our out-of-state numbers, though, we're also seeing encouraging signs there. 24% growth in the number of Tennessee residents that have registered for orientation at this point this year versus this point last year. But again, most of that growth is coming from Kentucky. And so when we zoom in as to where in Kentucky we're seeing that growth, I'm very encouraged that the bulk of the Kentucky growth is coming from right here in Warren County. We have 72 more students from Warren County that have registered for orientation this year versus on the same date last year. So that's really encouraging, and I really think that speaks to the fact that WKU really smashed the paradigm when it came to revamping our scholarship program in the fall. We did something that very few institutions in the country, not just in the Commonwealth, but in the country are doing when we removed that ACT requirement from most of our academic merit scholarships. And the purpose behind that was to provide more access to a WKU education for more, specifically Kentucky residents. And as we can see, the data so far is showing that has done exactly what it needs to. We've also increased the sophistication with which we're using data in our recruitment decisions. Rather than casting such a wide net and spending a lot of time and resources on students who have a low probability of enrolling at WKU or anywhere else, we've really been a lot more targeted in our approach and utilize that data to try to identify students who look like they have a higher probability of enrolling at WKU based on the data that we have available. We've also really taking a close look at those students that we admit to WKU who don't end up going anywhere. I don't know if you all have heard this figure yet or not, but among the students that we admit to WKU that don't come here, 52% of them don't go to college anywhere. So when you think about, okay, the students that we admit that don't come here, we must be losing the majority of them to other institutions. No, we're losing the majority of them either to not doing anything or going straight into the workforce. So that's really caused us over the past year, year and a half, to back up our messaging and not start the conversation with, here are all the reasons why you should come to WKU, but really start that conversation with, here's why college matters. Here's why it's important. And then we can move to, and here's why we think WKU is the best fit for you. And we've also been a lot more intentional about talking to students about the importance of starting where you hope to finish. Rather than, okay, well, I'm going to start somewhere else. I'm going to start at a two-year institution. I'm going to start at an institution close to home and then transfer to WKU. We've really been intentional about sharing the importance of starting where it is that you hope to finish. And so far, the numbers look good. When we dig deeper into those numbers and look at different types of students, really across the board, we're seeing some positive growth. And so the hope is that growth will continue throughout the summer, and we're going to see better results in our freshman class in August. So was that 3.5 minutes?
Close enough.
Good news can go longer.
That's right.
Yeah. I will add in, this is a chance for me to thank Jace, the entire enrollment management team. Folks have been working exceedingly hard on this, and I'm thankful for every person who's involved in the recruitment effort in that office. But this is an institution-wide effort. This is not just enrollment management. It's not only the staff who are out recruiting. It's every faculty member, every staff person, and many of our students who are actively involved and proactively communicating the value of a WKU experience, the value of going to college. While these are very positive numbers, and I wanted to make sure that you heard that from us, we're hearing similar things from competitors or sister institutions across the state. We are an outlier in terms of our trajectory being up versus where some other folks are in that first-year class, but there's a lot of work to do. And so before we start waving flags and celebrating and
The target date is September, not April. And so we're going to keep on with the incremental press and make sure these numbers stay strong. The other thing that I will mention, this is full-time first-year students. There are a range of other places where we have to continue to do better. Graduate recruitment, international recruitment, which you can, as you can imagine, is incredibly challenged right now, and transfer recruitment. All places where we can do more and will do more. But this is terrifically positive work, and so it's a testament to both the innovation that we've created, but also the work of hundreds and maybe thousands of folks across the enterprise.
Jace, thanks for the report. And give us some numbers on the international, because we expect further attrition just by some of the folks that entered. I think we were 1,200 strong a few years ago, and it's dropped with each year necessarily.
So one of the challenges in the international marketplace was a contract or a list that we fell off of six, 7 years ago, right, with Saudi Arabia. We were the second largest enrollment of Saudi students in the United States at one point. At our zenith, we were at about 1,400 international students. That's fallen to about 300. You can do the math on that. When you think about what the decline is in that enrollment, it has significant financial repercussions. We're not unique in this. There was an article just this week in the Chronicle of Higher Education talking about other institutions who've experienced similar challenges. We adjusted our budget up for something that we thought was a trend, but was a blip. And so we're continuing to build relationships, form relationships, deepen relationships internationally. But it is a market where we're having to be both cautious, but a market that we have to rebuild some relationships in. If you ask me where the growth potential is, I would argue international is probably not the place to look for massive growth today.
Yeah. This board in the past has talked about the importance of advising with regards to admissions and particularly retention. Are we doing more work in that area, and what role do you see that playing going forward?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there was a major change to the advising structure a couple of years ago, and where advising became a more centralized process and not necessarily done one way in this college and another way in that college. And good news travels, and students in general have expressed their satisfaction with the advising model. They realize that it's different than that which they may experience at other institutions, and they tell their friends that guidance counselors in high schools are aware of what we're doing on the advising front. And so, you know, any time a student has a positive experience here, it's going to help on the recruitment front with attracting more students to WKU. So that work is very interconnected to what we're doing. Chris Jensen in the Advising and Career Development Center is doing a lot of good work that news is spreading. So,
Jace, what county is the second largest county you're getting students from? I was just kidding.
What do you want to hear?
You know how many people I've driven up here on tours. Dr. Caboni knows. I have driven up, and I just have to tell you all that the tours they give when you get a program, you bring them on here, and the campus tours, I've sat through quite a few of them. They are great. They're fantastic. I've been the whole time. I'm just excited, and I try to contain some excitement, and I just don't want to go overboard with these students.
No, go overboard.
But I will tell you, it does a great job, the way you all got it set up, from the time they go into the Alumni Center to talk to the young ladies and go over the PowerPoint presentation to the tour. It is quite something, and you all have done an excellent job with that. But I was just wondering if Jefferson County maybe was a second.
Drum roll. Jefferson County is number two.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's all because of me. I know it.
It is.
It's got my name on
everything. Alumni word of mouth, and then Logan County is third.
Okay. So, I just wanted to bring up Jefferson.
What about Barron County?
Barron has grown. Yeah, this is in the top five.
Does anyone have any more questions?
Yeah, I have a. You mentioned the yield rate. So once the person's admitted, what is the yield?
For a Kentucky resident, it's about 34%. Institutionally, we were at 32 point something last year. For a Kentucky resident, it's about 34%. For a non-resident, it's anywhere from Tennessee is 29, Indiana and Illinois are 30. So roughly a third of a chance. So when you look at our total pool of admitted students, it can very roughly be divided into thirds. About a third of them are going to come here. A little less than a third won't come here. They'll go somewhere else. And then a little more than a third won't go anywhere.
I'm going to touch on that because I asked a similar question around, well, if you only have this much growth in the pool, what in your yield is this from last year, what do you think the assumption there is that you haven't done anything with price sensitivity, which is exactly why we did the new scholarship model. My expectation, and everybody's heard this from me, is that yield rate will continue to go up because we're being more targeted with the marketing, more targeted with the investment of discount, and the end result in that should be a larger percentage of the admitted students will choose to enroll. But it's okay. The exact right question. It's where I went to. When I first was the number 160 more.
I have a follow-up question. So first of all, I should say I'm very pleased because I got some information about the financial risk we're taking with that new program, and we need to see a positive return rate, otherwise we're in big trouble. But the question I have, since we're no longer tracking ACT scores, what kind of measurements do we have in terms of the quality of the students we...
Well, we do still utilize ACT scores in the admission decision, just not in the scholarship decision.
Oh,
so I think I took that out. But I will say that the academic quality of the class, and I have a slide that I can show you here, Klaus. It's very, very small, but you can at least see the green, which means growth. When you look at, we're looking at GPA bands right now, so you know, students with a 2.0 to a 2.49, 2.5 to 2.74, and on up. And you're seeing pretty much equal growth in every GPA ability band across the board. I had the slide with ACTs in here, but I knew that I was never going to be able to cover all of that in the prescribed amount of time. So I can get that information for you, and you can see. But there's positive growth across both ACT composite scores and across GPA bands in terms of students registered for orientation. Now, the numbers look a little bit different in terms of admitted students, but at this point in the cycle, I don't want to say the admitted student numbers don't matter, but at this point in the cycle, what we really need students to do is register for orientation because that is a real sign of their commitment to attend WKU. And I didn't include it in here, but one of the things we track even closer than that is students who have registered for orientation and have paid a housing deposit. If a student has taken those two actions, there's a very, very good chance that they intend on coming to WKU. And there are 267 more students that have done both of those things this time this year versus last. So
that's great. That's great.
It's a very... That really is probably the most important number to focus on because, you know, you're not going to pay a housing deposit and register for orientation at an institution that you really don't plan to attend.
Yeah, the reason I was asking this is we pay a lot of attention to retention, and certainly we don't want these retention numbers to slip, and so the quality of the students coming in is a fundamental that this doesn't slip because then retention would be much more difficult. That's what I was asking.
So, and I'm very familiar with particularly the GPA slide, but also the ACT slide because you're right on target. What we're seeing, particularly on the GPA side, as we use the investment to shape the class, you're seeing growth at 3.0 and above. You see a little bit of shrinking at below that because we focus so heavily on scholarships for students who are going to be able to be successful. And so one of the even more surprising things about that is you would expect growth in the 3.0 area because there's a new scholarship that's available for them. regardless of their ACT score. But what we're also seeing, and it's a little counterintuitive, is growth in the 3.8 to 4.0 student as well. So part of the conversation outside of the institution, and it's good when you're hearing it repeated back to you, is that WKU is a place that people are talking about again, that the student experience, particularly around First Year Village and what we're building, is something that many more people are interested in, that we're aggressive on the opportunity side, and we're growing diversity, but also we're growing our typical students as well. So essentially everything we're hitting is moving that needle, and we're seeing responses in the marketplace from competitor institutions as well, which also is a good sign.
And Dr. Caboni mentioned diversity. You know, as we drill down into these numbers even more, there's been a 52% increase in Black or African American students that have registered for orientation, 103% increase in Hispanic Latino students, 65% increase in students with from two or more races. So really across the board, academically, underrepresented status. I mean, there's just across the board we're seeing positive growth, and that's largely attributable to the scholarship model. So it's doing what we had hoped it would do.
Six more months.
Does anyone have any more questions?
Well, I think it's worth noting that everything we've talked about here really goes back to what was talked about with the strategic plan, and then the revamping curriculum and budget, and even with the nursing program, putting money towards something that we know is working, there's demand. These are the kind of problems we want, even though the accrediting boards may not be keeping up with stuff, but be that as it may, it's exciting to hear these numbers. Thank you, Jace, for your hard work. Everyone else that participates in this, we can't talk too much about that either. That's where Western has everybody meet.
Thank you, Jace. I always say I have the best committee. We always have good news and positive things to say.
Is that it, Cassandra?
Yes.
Okay, that finishes our committee part of the agenda. I'll go offline for just a second. If I may, I'd like to ask the VPs and the deans and other directors that are here today to stand up and introduce yourself to the board so that we can greet you and meet you during the break. So Amanda, I'm going to start with you over in the back corner because it's the last person in the church pew that gets called up.
Amanda Trevue, Vice President for Philanthropy and Alumni Engagement.
Mike Rigel, Assistant Vice President for Student Engagement.
Good morning, John Mark Francis, Director of Marketing.
Good morning, Rebecca Russell, Interim Budget Director. Hello, Christy Smith, Interim CFO.
Larry Snyder, Dean of Potter College of Arts and Letters.
Suzanne DeVries, Dean of University Libraries.
Tony Nelson, Dean of Resources.
Greg Arbuckle, Interim Dean, Ogden College of Science and Engineering.
Good morning, Corinne Murphy, Dean, College of Education and Behavioral Sciences.
Good morning, Chris Suick, I am Dean of the Gordon Ford College.
Brian Kuster, Vice President for Enrollment Student Experience.
Jace Lux, Director of Recruitment and Admissions.
Tony Basta, Dean of College of Health and Human Services.
Bruce Schulte, Associate Vice President of Strategy, Performance, and Accountability.
That's a mouthful.
I get the long one.
No, I got to beat.
Morning, Cheryl Stevens, Acting Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs.
All right, we'll do a letter check. Yeah, okay.
Good morning, Jennifer Smith, Special Assistant to the President for Government Community Relations.
Susan Howarth, EVP, Strategy, Operations, and Finance.
You got to say it all. You can't say EVP. That means.
I didn't get it.
Jennifer Tugas, the Interim Assistant Vice President for Business Services.
Eicher,
Jennifer Miller, outgoing director of audit. Andrea Anderson, assistant general counsel.
Deborah Wilkins, general counsel.
Brian Russell, chief facilities officer.
Hello, Todd Stewart, director of athletics.
The board expressed our appreciation for all that you do.
Skip their Bob.
Who we got?
Bob.
I remind us Skip Bob.
Bob is here.
Bob Skipper, director of media relations.
Let us express our appreciation for all you do for Western and your leadership. And thank you for being here this morning. Okay, Regents, do you want to break or we move on? We're getting close to wrapping up our morning if you want to move on. Will it work? Move on? In other business, we'll move next to the President's report.
Chair Higdon, Regents, thanks so much for the opportunity. This is something we introduced in the fall, an occasional update. From me to you in a bit of a more formal way than just responding to inquiries. And so I want to touch on three areas today. The first of the last of which will be a House budget update, the second of which will be a recap of the Council on Postsecondary Education presentation that I made in January, looking at some of those data. But I'll begin this morning with number one, some announcements around personnel, and the first of which is we've hired a new vice president for enrollment and student experience. Dr. Ethan Logan will be joining us on May 15th from Texas Tech University, where he has served as chief enrollment officer and has been responsible for a remarkable transformation of their recruitment and enrollment process. He spent his entire career there. And we're fortunate to have him join us. We'll have many other opportunities to do this, but he will be taking the seat that is now occupied by Brian Kuster, our current VP for Enrollment and Student Experience, who thankfully stayed for 2 years longer than he thought he was going to stay, but I knew he would stay longer, and has done a remarkable job at transforming that organization. But many more opportunities to celebrate him. The other announcement that you just had a preview of is that our Director of Internal Audit, Jennifer Miller, also will be departing in the next several weeks. Jennifer has worn two important hats for the university, both her professional role, but I'll mention her governance role as well, chairing the Staff Senate for two terms and being a great governance partner with me and for the university. And officially yesterday just had parental leave passed with 12 hours of leave for our staff. And so, Jennifer, we'll miss your leadership on the governance side, but also your internal audit skills. The organization that you've built during your tenure here has been outstanding. Your relationship with the board has been remarkable, and I'm thankful for your direct and honest counsel. And also for everything you've done for the university. Jennifer will be leaving to take the Director of Internal Audit position at Fruit of the Loom. We certainly could not match their salary, nor the opportunity that they provide for international travel and advancement. And so, Jennifer, congratulations. You're not going far, but we appreciate you very much. The second, and less... some of the work that I wanted to update you on with the university's preparation for any eventuality of coronavirus or COVID-19 coming to Bowling Green and Warren County. Our emergency management group has been working on this now for about 6 weeks since mid-January when we saw this as a possibility. I will repeat for everyone in this room, including Dean Basta, who's failed twice, at least on the face-touching portion of this instruction. The best thing that everyone can do right now is to wash your hands, not touch your face, and if you feel sick, please, please, please stay home. If we do those three things, we have a little bit more time to prepare. But preparation is exactly what we've been doing. Good issues management and crisis preparation is about planning for every eventuality and hoping that you never have to use that. And so we've begun all of the work necessary to think about if and when this were to show up in significant ways in Bowling Green and Warren County, what possibilities or what are the possible reactions we could take as a university? What are all of our contingency plans? We work really hard to ensure that we will have continuity of operations, that instruction can continue, even if its form may change and learning will continue to occur. I know that there was a case yesterday that was discovered in Williamson County in Tennessee, so on our doorsteps. But we're working closely, not just together as an institution, but with our partners in the medical community here in Bowling Green, but also with city and county leadership as well to make sure we're all ready and all working together. I will turn to the provost just for a moment. She has been updating the community, but also helping our faculty proactively think about how it is their instruction might shift in the event that we have to do something a little more radical. Sure.
So not knowing what this is going to look like, and knowing that we have quite a few faculty who teach in a traditional way, we've been offering, working with the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning to develop some webinars. They ran the first one yesterday. About 30 faculty participated. It's a live webinar. They delivered, essentially gave the faculty ideas about how they could deliver their class if they can't go to face-to-face. What options do they have? What technologies are available? People who don't know, don't know. And so we wanted them to start thinking about what they would do in the case that we said we can't have face-to-face classes. I hear 30 is a pretty good number for first pass, and it's only been 3 days since we advertised it. There will be another one next week. There will be a few after that, and they're going to record some so that they will be online and accessible to anybody who's interested. There are instructional designers in the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning, and we've invited people to come and work one-on-one if they have questions, if they have challenges. Please come in and we can help you figure out how you're going to deliver your class. And I think the important thing is that it doesn't have to look the way they said it would on the syllabus. The idea is that they deliver this class in such a way that the students get a good experience and can complete. So I'm very concerned with how students are treated, if a student isn't feeling well, to not be penalized because they don't come to class or because they turn in an assignment late. That's just unacceptable at this point. So we're working on that as well. We want all the students to be able to get through the semester successfully.
And Provost Stevens, and I'll add on to that that paying attention to the student experience is also the same thing that we need to pay attention to for our faculty and staff, to make sure that everyone understands that the way you get through a challenging situation is by working together as a community. That means being flexible, everybody carrying some extra weight on occasion. So if someone in your area isn't going to be in, that you can pick up the slack and they'll pick up the slack for you. This is something that we do as a community during the summer anyway, in a smaller way. But at the end of the day, all we can do is prepare for every contingency and be ready, all the while hoping that we get through this with minimal disruption. And so it's not a time to panic. It is a time to be thoughtful and take the opportunity to be prepared that we have given where we are in the situation.
It might be worth interjecting a good time to dust off Jose Bone's book, Teaching Naked, which we all heard about at a state higher ed convention one time, and he elucidates in that book many ways that you can teach without being physically present. So if someone needs inspiration, that's a good book to look at.
Yeah, and one of the outgrowths of this may be we never have to use it because of coronavirus, but even more faculty who might think a little bit differently about instruction just because they're having to prepare for something that usually they wouldn't have to prepare for. So
every industry's got to go through the same thing. You see a big jump in telehealth and how it can be used. And you may see that on campus here too.
I think Julia shared with me, she did a telehealth visit. I'm confident that violates HIPAA. I'm sorry. did a telehealth visit just a few weeks ago and really suggested that if you're unable to get into or don't want to walk down to the on-campus clinic or make a visit with your provider in town, that's an option always available to our faculty and staff, and you found it remarkably helpful.
Very helpful. Very easy, convenient. Because I was working so hard here, I couldn't break away.
I really want to commend Dr. Capone and the team for what you're doing, and that you're focused on the right things. That it's your students, it's the faculty, it's the staff, it's the broader community, but even more so the fact that you're thinking about the opportunity that this creates for the future. Education's changing anyway. And a lot of people are deciding what is the pace of that? This is actually bringing that pace a whole lot closer to us in terms of what we have to think about. So I think it's great what you're doing, and so I really do commend you for your activities, because this will pay off, not just in what we're dealing with in the crisis today, but what we can do tomorrow in terms of teaching our students. Give them that.
I think you all have in front of you, or about to have in front of you, a placemat. That's what they call it at CPE. It is a document that requires glasses for most people to read. It's essentially the dashboard that CPE looks at annually for the university. None of these data should look different to you. Bruce Schulte, with his exceedingly long title, tracks 84 or so various metrics for us, and we keep up to date on. We have a smaller group of about 13, 14 that we really zoomed in on, many of whom you'll see reflected here, but you can see the relationship between these and performance funding. I want to call your attention to a couple numbers. On the retention front, our 18, 19, these lag a little bit too, but I still think it's good information. Our 18 to 19 one-year retention rates are at the highest they've been as an institution in 5 years. It was 72.9% for all first-time full-time baccalaureate students, 64.7% for low-income students, and 59.5% for underrepresented minority students. We continue to make progress on that. There are data that we're seeing between fall and spring retention that shows that. One example is that we have preliminary data for our first cohort of summer scholars. You remember those were the students who came in with a high school GPA of less than 2.5. In the fall of 19 to spring 20, for that group, the 147 who came in, 117 made it into the fall. 73.8% of those students came back in the spring semester. The same cohort of students who started in fall of 18 retained fall to spring at a 68% rate. And so we've moved that by about 5 percentage points. Again, focusing narrowly on interventions for specific groups of students. If you look at graduation, 17-18 was the highest six-year graduation rate on record at 53.4%. We did slip a little in 18-19, but, and this is important, we are on target for another record-breaking year in 19-20. Already, 53.4% of next year's cohort, those who began in year 2014, have already graduated. And so we still have spring and summer graduates to go, and we should exceed our target of 53.7% there. Our four-year graduation rate increased from, in 2008-2009, 21.9% to 18-19, 40.1%. That is a remarkable, remarkable jump in a decade, and focused on that completion rate. We did produce slightly fewer degrees at the baccalaureate and graduate level. Those correspond to declining entering cohorts in the entry years. But while degrees awarded to low-income students declined, we awarded baccalaureate degrees to the highest number of underrepresented minority students since 2010, when the current edition of URM was developed. And so That's a crucially important market for us. When you think about the demographic shift going on in the United States, the numbers you hear from Jace around growth in underrepresented minority students is the future majority of enrollment in our institutions eventually. So we have to pay attention to those demographic shifts. Also proud that our average time to degree has decreased from 4.28 years in 2008-09 to 4.05 years in 2018-2019. What does that mean? It means that while we still measure that six-year time to degree, we're really moving, trying to focus on getting folks done in 4 years to reduce that debt load. And part of that, we moved our target last year from 38.6 hours at graduation down to 37 hours at graduation, credit, total credit hours. Most undergraduate degrees are about 120 hours in total credit. This year, we surpassed even that new target where we hit an average of 136.3 credit hours. Now, this is terrific work by our faculty advisors, our central advisors, everybody who's helping folks pick the right courses and help them getting into the majors that they're going to stay in and graduate from instead of shifting around or pre-picking a major and then moving into a different major. So I think we've done some good work there. We won't ever get this down to 120, nor should we. And the reason for that is that we have some eminently bright students who enter with a year, some 2 years of already accumulated credit. They want to spend more than just 2 years with us and pursue two majors or two majors and a minor or one major and three minors. And how many majors do you have, Will? One major, just one minor?
Two minors.
Two minors, there we go. So that takes more than 120 credit hours, but actually really prepares these young folks for what they're going to go do afterward and give them a range of opportunities. The success of underprepared students in gateway courses. We made significant progress increasing the percentage of our incoming students who complete a credit-bearing course within their first year. And I particularly want to call out the efforts of Klaus's colleagues in the math department who have been really important in this success, and also the faculty in our Department of English. We're going to see even higher rates of success in credit-bearing courses because we essentially have eliminated developmental coursework and really trying to help students take credit-bearing classes with supplemental instruction alongside them to help them move towards success. Our net price did increase slightly this year. I think and I know that our new scholarship program will continue to focus on affordability, but we are still less expensive than all other Kentucky institutions except for KSU, Murray, and NKU. WKU, in addition to an undergraduate experience that's unparalleled, a first-year village, learning communities is getting ready to open and transform that first-year experience even further. A campus that is unparalleled, an hour north of the hottest city in the country, and a remarkable value at that, tens of thousands of dollars less than those other institutions, is something we should all be very proud of. That's point two of the President's report. And finally, last night, the House version of the executive branch budget was introduced and in the Appropriations and Revenue Committee. And this is important for as we're crafting budgets for next year. The House transferred the governor's 1% increase to base budgets that was proposed by Governor Beshear and put that in the performance pool funding budget. In year one, that's another $23.6 million. And in year two, another $17.2 million, a total of $40 million over the biennium more that will flow through performance funding. There's also a 2% stop loss provision that helps make sure that no institution, particularly Kentucky State, Moorhead, and Murray, is hurt by the shifting of dollars. The shift from resources will continue, but you don't want to. The way the law was written, that would have had there would have been no stop loss next year, and there would have been a massive shift. So did that. The budget includes funding for the Gatton Academy and Kentucky Mezzanet at current levels. That's $4.7 million for Gatton and $750,000 for Mezzanet. And then the House kept Governor Beshear's Resurgence Fund, which is important for us in terms of maintaining our facilities at a $2 from the state, $1 from the university opportunity for us. This is the middle of a long process. And so Jennifer will communicate to campus today. Jennifer Smith will communicate to campus today where we are now in the conversation, but a lot more work to do as this budget, hopefully today, makes its way over to the Senate side. One final note on House Bill 171. This is a KERS reform bill, which would give us an opportunity to perhaps stay in the system and pay our unfunded liability over 27 years. In the bill right now, that participation rate would increase to 80%. There is some hope that in some other portion of the budget, there would be some decrease that would create a contribution rate of 50% for us. The Senate seems uninterested in this bill right now. It's been there for a while. They haven't taken much interest in pushing it forward, but we're continuing to work and advocate strongly for WKU and higher education in particular. I'll say this, it's my third session here in the state. It is a much better place for us to be getting a conversation around what's the number for an increase, even if it flows through performance funding, than how much of a cut is higher education going to take. And so I'm hopeful that the negative news of 14 years might be reversed. But there's a long way to go between now and the end of the session. So I will keep you all informed.
Yeah.
How's it?
I want to add a couple of comments to the President's report, but before I do that, is the Regent have a question?
Question. For this retirement system, don't we have a deadline of April 1 to make a decision? Where does that stand?
We have between April 1 and April 30 to make a decision. And so we're still working on, so there are two issues for this. Northern Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, and WKU have contracted with an outside group to look at our numbers. We received preliminary estimates back from the retirement system. I'll share those numbers with you in a second. But the real challenge for us is that as fiduciaries, it's really difficult for me to ask you to make a decision based upon data with this caveat that was listed at the bottom of the letter. All these numbers are subject to change based upon recalculation in July, and you are unable to re-enter the system if you decide to exit. That's my reaction exactly. The number would be the total liability for a hard exit, which we're not contemplating, is $140 million. Soft exit, it's $180 million. If you think about the escalator, for a hard exit, it's $10 million. For the soft exit, it's $14 million. 1.5% increase every year until it's paid off. With that magnitude of increase between what we pay today and what it would take to pay, it's exceedingly unlikely that that's even doable. And we don't know if they're the final numbers or not.
Right.
But we'll have more information at the April, between now and the April meeting.
Anyone else? Questions? I want to pick up on a couple of comments of the President's. First, Jennifer. We're going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Several years ago, the board reinvested in our internal audit program. Jennifer was selected to the banner to take it forward, and you have done a remarkable job. As the board knows, she's a direct line report to the board. Our greatest fiduciary responsibility lies in the internal audit program, and you've done a tremendous job. You built a foundation that will carry us into the future. So on behalf of the board, thank you. You're going to be missed, but you've left us in a good place. So thank you very much.
Well, I just want to say thank you, everybody. President Cabot, thank you so much. Everybody in this room, you've been a great partner for me and internal audit, and the board, of course, so supportive. And I know that we built a great department, and I know that it's going to go on and do great things and be even better than what we have right now. So I'm sorry. I don't even know what to say. I have loved this experience, and this is my home. It has been since 1998 when I set foot on campus as a student, and I love WKU, and I will not be far. And I know, you know, eventually maybe I'll be back someday. I don't know, but right now I appreciate the experience and the support, and I will miss all of you. And but I am not far. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer. Would you introduce your associate, Sarah?
This is Sarah Reese. She has been with me for almost 5 years now. And I've said her name in this meeting before. She's phenomenal. And I'm just so thankful that she came to me and I hired her, thank goodness. But she's great, and I look forward to seeing what she can do with this department. I know it's in good hands if that's the case. But I don't know if you want to say anything, but Sarah's wonderful. I know she'll take it farther than I have, and it's in good hands. So
I'm not a great off-the-cuff speaker, but I just want to say Jennifer has been a fantastic mentor, and I'm so glad that she took a chance on hiring me. And couldn't have had anybody better in this role, so I appreciate everything you've done to set us up to be a great department. So thank you.
Thank you. I want to report to the board that earlier this year, Chair Gail Johnson initiated sort of a social setting with the campus groups, and he and I had dinner one evening with the faculty senate, and it was very productive. It was a great outreach and efforts of shared governance. Last night, Jason McKinney, as vice chair, and myself had the opportunity to have a social event and dinner with the staff senate, of which Jennifer chairs that position. It was a very informative night. I enjoyed it. I just want to make the board aware of that. And, good efforts. Good efforts. We heard a lot of great, great information. Earlier in the year, we had board assessments. I have compiled the responses. I'm going to pass those out, let you take them with you for digesting, and reach out to you in the coming weeks as we address how we need to train and assess our board going forward. I will say to you that the responses were a little lacking, but statistically is probably a good indicator of some of the things in the board we need to be working on. With that being said, before I announce the upcoming events, any board member have anything they want to say? Will?
Yeah, so I wanted to give you all, I guess, an announcement from a SGA standpoint and kind of update you all on the world of students and student government. So I know that's something that we've never done here while I've been here, and I thought that would be something beneficial to add so you all can get a little bit of our perspective. So updates as far as SGA goes, we've got a couple of new programs that we've revamped and restarted up, one of which is called the Earn a Computer program, which gives students the opportunity to complete community service and receive a free iMac, which is a partnership with our recycled computer program and with Surplus. And we've had 23 students that have been accepted for that program for the first year back on campus. So that was great to see that. And we should be sending those computers out after spring break. And that's an awesome opportunity for those students Secondly, we've given out over $38,000 in scholarships this year and funded $16,000 in organizations. And this is where all that SGA money is going, is towards those main projects and programs, which when you break it down, that's funding close to 50 student organizations and a lot of students. I can't do the math that quick in my head. Also, another thing that we've done this year is a continuation of a program called Go With The Flow, which places feminine hygiene products throughout campus, and they're in bathrooms located throughout campus in order for easy access and free access across campus to those hygiene products. One of the big things that we've been working on is our special projects fund, and this year we are doing a hammock bill, which Brian Kuster and Brian Russell have helped out a lot with. Basically, one of the things that we saw need was SGA funding more physical changes to campus, and we've decided to move forward with a hammock bill, which will place different hammock areas around campus. It's a little cold today, but if you were here yesterday, you would have seen plenty of students that would be hammocking around campus on trees. And basically the goal and the purpose of this was to reduce the stress on trees and to give students the opportunity to have quick and easy access to hammocks, partnering with the residence halls and the Residence Hall Association in order to do so. Also, I wanted to thank Brian Russell, who's heading the campus master plan, the 10-year plan for the university. Brian has done a tremendous job in getting student input on that committee, which is something that I will always advocate and value as a student and as a student body president. So I thank you, Brian, for doing that. And, you know, that's just another great example of the student-centered and shared governance approach that we have at this university. Also, an update from this week, we had our Rally for Higher Education in Frankfurt, which was a great showing. I'd like to thank President Caboni and Jennifer for attending the rally. They were the only two administrators from the entire state of Kentucky that came to the rally and represented their respective institutions. And I think that is very telling of our administrators here at Western Kentucky University. And you don't find anybody else like that. You know, we had all the public institutions represented, so that's the schools up top that wear red and schools up top that wear blue, and everybody else in the state of Kentucky that were there. And only President Caboni was the only president that attended the event. So thank you for that. That was a fantastic opportunity. And also, just as a side note, SGA is still waiting on their dinner from New Jersey.
So good. You're on the list.
Thank you. Regent Nichols, anything?
Nope. That's good.
Regent Klaus? Nope. Regent Hinton?
I'm just glad to be here.
Regent Bell? Just a comment. I had the distinct privilege of accompanying President Caboni and Jennifer Smith one day with legislative visits with basically the Senate leadership, and those two folks are phenomenal. So we're well represented in Frankfurt. The respect and the integrity that the senator showed those two individuals was very apparent, and so the relationship that built, the information that they shared with you, your ability to comment and interject, recommend, we're well represented. Thank you. Jason, anything?
Two quick things. I will miss Jennifer Miller. She has been a tremendous advocate for staff, and also in her role as internal audit. We had the unfortunate need 5 years ago to utilize her services briefly, and that was the first time I'd met her. She was tremendous in that role, and I cannot think of a way that could have been handled with higher level of integrity. and I will personally and professionally miss her on this campus. Second note quickly, I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago to represent public broadcasting, and it is great when the representatives that we know, particularly Congressman Guthrie, James Comer, and even Senator Paul, will acknowledge us on site as WKU. And even in a room of 38 broadcasters, Congressman Guthrie specifically called attention to the fact that we were here representing the Western Kentucky University and how proud he was of the university. And when you can get them to say things before you have to speak, that means that the message is getting through. So I just want to say great work. I think the message is getting across, and I think our Washington representation understands it as well.
I'd just like to say thank you to all. I mean, what a great meeting, and I think we're headed in a wonderful direction.
Regent Porter.
From that.
Regent Gilman, are you there?
This is Sheldon. I'm here.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Momentary lapse there.
That's okay.
Sheldon, any comments or questions?
Now, thank you all for a great meeting today. I've enjoyed listening, and thanks for creating an environment where it's okay to stay calm if you are sick or if you're I have been popping on you for 3 days. So, you all are doing great things. I appreciate your time today.
Apologize for the name snafu. I don't know where I got Gilman from.
it's okay.
Thank you, Sheldon. Anything else? Look at our upcoming dates. You do note the committee meeting changed to April 17th so that we could have coordination with the kickoff event. I apologize to a couple of the regents that this created a conflict for. Otherwise we're going to go with April 17th. You see our meeting schedules. Please note the retreat in August. If you have any agenda item that you would like to put on the retreat, a need that you feel that we should look into, please do so. And also think about more training and items or matters that you might want to accomplish or undertake in some regent board training.
Ready to tour?
The last thing is your update on our commons tour.
Yes, so we are going to load the shuttle right out here downstairs on the street. Everybody will stay and make that. And we will return here, so if you want to leave your things here, Jeff's going to stay and lock everything up. We'll be here.
Entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Brinkley, seconded by Linda Ball.